TheFan960 Pinder on Twitter. This is Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
What a weekend it was. Masters Sunday looked like could be a yawner. And then, oh, we got a tournament now. Nothing like a quadruple bogey on number 12 from your leader to tighten things up. Wasn't the leader after that. Also, Calgary Flames wrapped up the regular season, and all kinds of questions will be asked today as the Flames will be clearing out their lockers. One final opportunity for members of the media to meet with the Flames and members of the organization. With more on that, Darren Haynes joins us on the phone line. Haynesy, how was the weekend?
Wasn't bad, sir. Not too bad at all. How are you?
I'm good. I got completely cleaned up in my Masters pool. I was nowhere close. How'd you do?
I wasn't. I had 15 guys that made the cut out of 18 in my box pool, but they were all towards the bottom part, not the top part. So, and I didn't have the winner. You need to have the winner in those things.
Yeah, you didn't have Willett or Smiley Kaufman, I'm guessing, huh?
Who is Smiley Kaufman?
Well, his brother's name's Lucky. I feel like it might be a family of people hanging around Snow White. No?
No doubt. Disney fans. Big ones.
Yes, huge ones. Did you settle in for Game 82? Is this an event that managed to get onto your radar? I know you're an enthusiast, but this of all the games this year that there could be interest for, this would be the most difficult sell job to me.
In a way, I suppose, but they gave it something to watch, bringing up Oliver Shillington. 18-year-olds don't play in the Calgary Flames lineup very often, historically, so that was a point of curiosity. And the Patrick Seeloff, Turner Ellison angle, I think those are two guys that are good guys who are respected, who I'm not sure either one has an NHL career ahead of them, but they got to get in an NHL game. I thought that was a cool thing, and so that was kind of an interesting angle as well, I thought.
Thoughts on Shillington?
Oh, I mean, he was okay. He was fine. Made a few mistakes. I noticed in one of the goals, but that's going to happen. He's not ready to play yet. He's not going to be on this team next September or October, but he's someone that, continues to make strides. You talked to Ryan Huska, and when I've talked to him, said the same thing. He's getting better at those areas of the game that he needs to get better at, but it's not a one-year thing. I'm sure he'll be in for another season in the American Hockey League, but you got to be pretty pleased if you're their organization with that player, getting him almost in the third round last year.
Yeah, and specifically, I think you'd have to be happy with just the depth shown on the blue line. There's a lot of question marks. I wouldn't say the cupboard was bare, but there were certainly a lot of guys who you didn't know a lot about nearing the end of their entry-level contracts. Kulak then makes the team out of camp. I thought Wotherspoon had a nice showing down the stretch. Nicladel is a guy that had never set foot on North American soil before Flames development camp. He looks like a guy that could at least be a depth defender. We feel a lot better about the cupboards on the blue line than we did in the fall, don't we?
Yeah, and that was why I'm curious. I just arrived at the Saddle Dome, and I'll be here today. And if we do get to as far as the GM, Brad Treliving, today, if not, it'll be tomorrow. But it was last year at this time, only 1 month later because of the playoffs, where he said specifically, he said, the goal for the offseason is we need to get deeper on the blue line. That was one of the areas they needed to address. He went out and addressed it in all sorts of ways in terms of bringing in guys that go into the pipeline. And, I'm kind of curious to see what he sees as the weakness on the team developmentally in the organization. You know, obviously, it's goaltender, but what else does he see? And so that'll be something that we'll hopefully find out today.
Yeah, it'll be neat. Who are you looking forward to speaking with? I know of all the players, the biggest offseason things you've already mentioned, they need a goalie and they're going to have to sign their two young stud top line forwards. But beyond those discussions, what are some of the other areas you'll be looking to dig?
I haven't really, I'm on the Simon for Canadian Press today. So, just kind of, there's nothing too specific looking into. I'm curious now that the season is over, just for some reaction from some of the players on looking back and, kind of where did it get away? What was, do you have now that it's 6 months later, can you look back and say, you know what, maybe we did have some swagger that we really didn't earn yet coming into the season. And maybe that October where they went, 2-8-1 to start the season. So just looking at, it'd be interesting to see kind of their eyes, hopefully some honesty in terms of what went wrong this season.
Yeah, that's a dreadful start for sure. Beyond that, With all the positives that I think we've garnered, many of them were products of the final third of the year when really there wasn't much on the line. I feel like that's going to be a discussion down at the Dome, not maybe what changed or how much easier was it to play, knowing that it wasn't, win or lose, it wasn't going to be the end of the world for this group. I don't know what to make of it. It's really confounding to me how much credit we can put on a lot of the performances we saw when it didn't really matter anymore in terms of a playoff spot.
Yeah, that's a question definitely on my list. And not so much for the players, because I don't think Joe Colburn or Michael Ballard, I don't think anyone's throwing goals back. But it would be curious to see how that's evaluated from a coaching perspective and from a managing perspective or a management perspective, because it does make a difference. Some of these guys need new deals, and also just in terms of overall evaluation, where you think they slot in, how much stock do you put in what's happened in February and March?
What about Joe Colburn this summer? Are you of the mind that a certain thing has to get done or that there's an easy resolution here? I see an absolute disaster of a negotiation unfolding with the numbers that he's got, the unsustainability of his play down the stretch. He was shooting at almost 30%. And on top of that, just the crunch they've got for 1 year here before the contracts of Englund and Schmid and Mason Raymond come off the books.
Yeah, it's a fascinating situation, to be honest. I mean, you look at the production that he's put up, and there are the parallels with Lance Boma. Where that difference is, where that differs is, I think if you put them side by side, Colburn should be getting a lot more, in terms of what he's done versus what Lance Boma did. So, I don't know if we'll have Brett Schlemmy come out and say the Boma situation was a regret and maybe they should have just gone to arbitration and if they had to pony up a bunch of money for a short deal, maybe that was the better path in hindsight. But it's now the same situation they're looking at. And what do they do? Do they, because Colburn's going to get some money, but it's up to the team. If they go to arbitration, well, then it could be a shorter deal. And maybe you'd rather pay him more for a shorter deal and basically make them kind of prove it than kind of locking into something too long for too much over longer term.
Yeah, see, I'm of the opposite mind. I don't think you can pay this guy big though next year or any year, just because I don't think we've seen enough. Is he a useful player? Yes. Are you of the mind that this club without him is losing a core part? I'm not. And the dilemma that I have here is if you get into arbitration, you're now in a spot where you either have a contract you probably don't like, or you're going to walk away from the asset and lose it for nothing. I think this has to be addressed before you get into the arbitration hallway, because if you trade him, someone else can do the negotiation. At least you get something for the asset if there's a number you don't like.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly that angle to it. I don't know. I think that seems a bit extreme. In an arbitration situation, it could be a one-year deal, right? So, if they have to pay 2.7 for 1 year, I don't think one-year deals, GMs will tell you all the time, it's term that kills you, not the AAV. So, is he someone now to switch and look at your perspective, is he someone that could be traded? Is he someone that could be an asset? I mean, how many GMs are looking at a guy as a first-round pick that put up that kind of numbers? Absolutely, there's some attraction there.
The best way that someone questioned it or put this to me on the text line on Friday was, what would Chicago do here? Because I think it's easy to justify, keeping guys around. Everyone likes their players, a little more than, maybe someone from afar would. I don't think there's any way the Chicago Blackhawks would be keeping a guy like this around. I think it's the kind of thing where they move them or they walk if they get a settlement they don't like.
Right. Well, it's a gutsy play to take a guy like that and just walk away. And I don't know if I see that happen. I honestly don't. So I know what you're saying. And yeah, I guess we'll see. I mean, I think it's fascinating. But what I think you don't want to do if you're the team, and again, it's the BOMA deal that you're looking at, is you don't want to get into both term and money. So one way or another, we'll see how this unfolds. But if I'm Joel Colburn, I mean, looking at it from the player's view, you know, at the end of the day, he put up some pretty good numbers. He was used a lot. And so is he willing to just accept something small? I don't think that's the case either. So it's definitely a case where the player is entitled, the player has earned a pay bump. And if the team doesn't think he's going to deserve it, and they're concerned about the number, then definitely maybe he becomes the guy that they leverage to try and get a goaltender. Maybe that's the win-win out of this.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, because I do think the player's got a leg to stand on. The agent's going to have a very strong case for a significant raise. You could probably ask yourself, salary to be tripled, because he's making what, 1.1 right now. I mean, that the kind of season he had in terms of the counting stats were excellent. The concern from the team standpoint is that one out of every, you know, 3.5 shots on net went in for the final third of the year. There's no way you can repeat that over 82 games. Ovechkin doesn't even do that.
Yeah, and here's the catch. When you go to arbitration, these are lawyers, not hockey people, that are making decisions. So a lot of the arguments that come back to you kind of more on the advanced side and analytics side, that stuff, I mean, I've heard stories of arbitrators being faxed a copy of hockey vocabulary so they can better understand the case. So if it gets to that point, you know, any kind of the arguments towards, you know, the shooting percentage and those kind of things will probably become more of minutia. So definitely, you know, he's in the driver's seat in terms of getting some money. And if it's not from Calgary, it's going to be somebody. And we'll just see how that shakes out.
Oh, I don't like it one bit. I don't like it. Moving along, there's other players that need new contracts. Do you see any other potential snags? I mean, obviously the Monahan-Gaudreau stuff is front priority, front of mind. That's absolutely what you have to address. But beyond that, there's some other interesting players. Josh Juris is an RFA. You've got a bunch of guys from the minors that need new contracts, i.e. Drew Shore, Turner Elson, Tyler Watherspoon, Freddie Hamilton, Bill Arnold. Any other curious angles there? Obviously, they'll qualify Ortio.
I don't know if that's obvious yet.
The asset for $660,000?
If he agrees to it, though, right? Like, maybe...
Well, just to keep the asset, you qualify him. I'm not saying the deal's done at 660.
Okay, I'm with you. Well, yeah, no, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Okay, so that makes sense, because I don't think you can auto-qualify him. I'm not sure he's even accepting that. So, yeah, I see where you're going. No, so the Ortio one and the goaltending situation is obviously front and center. From that list that you named, Josh Juris is certainly a name that intrigues me, because I don't think that's a slam dunk. I think there's lots of guys that are of similar roles, and it's not that Josh Juris is going to be super expensive, but, you know, are there other guys they want to try there just to change the mix a little bit? We know from how Juris was utilized, I don't think he's the coach's number one guy. So so that's one curious to me. If Freddie Hamilton wasn't back, that wouldn't surprise me. Just as one of those kind of journeyman guys. Yeah, he looked good in spurts in his kind of late call-up, but I don't know if he's the kind of guy that, you know, maybe they keep around. The brother connection is certainly a possibility there. Turner Elson, you know, that's where I think that game yesterday might be his swan song. You never know. Like, they love him in the American Hockey League, and he'll be kicking around that league probably for a few years, but is his future in this organization? I'm not sure. So lots of RFAs, you know, there's only so many contracts you can have. Some of those guys are going to be turned over, and I think there's probably a few that you mentioned there won't be back next year.
Yeah, and I just sort of, the way I look at it, you know, you cannot take away from Joe Colburn what he did this year. Ditto for Josh Juris last year when he had a dozen goals. But I'm not convinced you couldn't get the same production out of guys like Derek Grant or Garnet Hathaway in terms of the combined total of goals for, you know, a fraction of the price next year.
Yeah, no, it's the cost of doing business, right? And you can't always pay guys exactly what you want. And sometimes they're in better positions to get more money. And that's kind of the situation that Lance Bowman was in last year. So it's not always perfect. It's not the science, as they say. But, you know, there are definitely plenty of storylines to track during this offseason.
It is Flames Locker Clearout Day. For those listening that have not been there, paint a picture. What is it like? How does it happen? How many people are there? What are the moods like? How good are the chats?
Well, first, let's dispel the notion that anybody leaves the rink with a garbage bag. I've never seen that yet. So it's called Garbage Bag Day, but nobody's leaving here with a glad black bag over their shoulder with their various collectibles from the season. So, you know, players have their meetings. They'll meet with the coach. They'll meet with the GM. Some meetings will be longer than others. And so throughout the morning, and this will get going probably shortly, guys will come out, and sometimes two at a time, sometimes one at a time, and the various media that will be on hand, and it's usually quite plentiful, we'll keep them for 5 to 10 to 15 minutes, and just, you know, it's our last chance to ask them those questions, that sort of thing. And inevitably, sometimes you hear about injuries, whatnot. That's usually after a playoff run. You hear about the injuries that happened that guys are playing through. I'm not sure if there's any surprises like that in store for us today. But it's a busy day. It's going to be a busy day down here.
All right. We'll see you down there. Thanks, buddy.
All right. See ya.
Darren Haynes, flamesfrom80feet.ca. And yeah, there'll be all kinds of content hitting his website in a matter of hours as the day unfolds. Essentially, a chance to speak with every single Calgary Flame not named Yuri Hudler, who was traded, so we don't get to moan about him not showing up for conversations with the media. Mika, I think Kipasov is famous for doing the same thing, if I'm correct, Jay? Does that ring a bell? Mika? Yeah, don't really want to talk. Yeah, I don't speak English. Tell them that. Okay, see ya. Be back in the fall. Which is fine. It's not everyone's bag. It's just, I would figure if you're making the kind of money you make and you understand the role of the media, not huge, but something, what's 15 minutes? These are the people that'll either, you know, parade you as a hero in the papers or say this guy's a jerk. I'm not suggesting an attendance at today is the determining factor, but a little goodwill can be earned on a day like today, and hopefully we'll hear from the coaching staff, general manager, maybe even presidents of sorts. We will see. It'll be a fun one. We'll step aside and return with your thoughts on anything Flames locker cleanout day. The Joe Colbert negotiation is going to be a nightmare. I don't like it one bit. What are your thoughts? If you've got a goalie figured out, looking like a buyer's market out there, Flames need at least one goalie. A lot of teams, if there's an expansion draft in 15 months, need to get rid of a guy and get some assets back. Problem is, this is the opposite of musical chairs. There's a lot of goalies. There's only a couple seats, i.e. teams looking for a starting netminder. So is it discount bargain bin shopping for goalies this summer? It's probably what your economics majors would tell you. Demand, relatively low. Supply, pretty high. Low prices. We'll take those thoughts. And of course, anything Green Jacket, Spieth blow up on the back nine. Could you have less than 7 shots on number 12? I feel like he could play left-handed and might have a chance at that. Come back with your thoughts. 960-960, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the morning, only on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
.926, this is the final day for this group of men down at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Never, ever again will they be together in that rink. Free agents, retiring, eating chocolate in Switzerland. There's a lot of different plans for this group as they move forward. So we're all be heading right after the show today. But it is not to the end of the season for 16 teams much better than the Calgary Flames this year. And it sounds like we're going to have an absolute radio full of playoff hockey coming your way right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. The early schedule is out for all the games in the opening round. And here's what we know, Jay.
This is fresh.
Wednesday is the postseason opening, but we don't carry a game Wednesday night. We will Thursday. We're going to take game one of the Sharks and Kings. It was 3-0 Sharks. How did this happen? Remember that?
I do.
This will have a bit of a flavor to it. We're going to carry a bunch of this series, too, it sounds like.
Game 1, 2, 3 at least. And whatever follows that, we'll see as the schedule unfolds.
Right on. So Thursday night, we got some playoff hockey for you late night, too. 8:30 to 11:30. Night owls that are listening here at 9:30 will enjoy that because you're just crawling out of the rack, I bet. Pacific time zone, obviously, so the late starts. Game 2 will also be in L.A., then that's Saturday. Then Game 3 goes Monday. We got a doubleheader next Monday. In fact, Monday's getting real busy because I believe we're taking a Jays game.
Yeah, Saturday, same thing. Saturday doubleheader.
Yeah.
5 p.m. Flyers at Capitals game one, 8:30 p.m. Sharks at Kings game two.
And then we do the same thing on Monday. We'll be foregoing Flames at 5 for Flyers Caps game two.
I think Monday is like a 9 a.m. Jays game.
Yeah.
So that's overnight and early.
Jays game 9 till noon. We'll have afternoon show and right into hockey doubleheader on Monday next week. Oh, it's going to be awesome. Do you do the playoff pool thing or not? I'm meeting with some buddies tonight at a pub down in the Mission, which is, it's just going to be fantastic. The pool is always like fourth or fifth on the priorities. It's always like ridiculing last year's loser.
Oh, and who's actually leading in the pool?
Smack talk, drinking copious amounts of alcohol, dirty jokes, and then fifth would be the actual.
Yeah, it's down there, six, seven.
Yeah, way down there. So I'm looking forward very much to that. And if you have a stunt double for me tomorrow, that would be much appreciated. Although we could probably finish that.
How many
that
people
up.
Are joined? Oh, man. 330 players so far.
330. Join our playoff pool.
In our Boomer and Warner NHL Bracket Challenge on NHL.com.
This is awesome. And the one thing that happened when they changed the old playoff format, the 1-8, and they'd reseed every round, the problem with it, yes, you always get, you know, the strongest team earns the weakest opponent, and every round they'd reshuffle that, but you couldn't do brackets anymore. Because if there was an upset, the guy wouldn't go to the next one, he'd slide down, and you can't do a bracket. So they've gone to the divisional playoff format again, much like they did way back in the 80s, the Smythe, the Norris, the Adams, the Patrick, all that stuff. But the beauty is you can actually fill out a whole bracket. So join us. Head to sportsnet.ca/bracket. That'll redirect you to the NHL website, or you can just start there. You want to join a league that's already up and running. The name of that league is Boomer and Warner. Booner? Booner. Boomer.
Booner.
Ampersand Warner.
Palmer and Rhett. And you can join now, and you don't have
Boom
to
and Bormer.
Don't have to instantly make all your picks. You have until
no, you
I
got
guess
until Wednesday,
Wednesday
night. You got until half a minute before the game start. Apparently,
just sign up, get in. You're
yeah,
good.
Just get your team name in, join later. The pool, and you know what? We might hit a wall. They might limit us at 500. Or
yeah,
something.
We're at 330. I don't know what the thing is.
We started
it might be like thousands.
Two this morning, and the names are even. This is kind of like my thing tonight. It's like the actual pool is way down the list of priorities. This one with our listeners, who can come up with the best team name,
yeah,
pretty
team
much
names.
Wins the pool. You could have the Minnesota Wild winning the cup and all the top seeds losing in the first round and still be a hero if you have an incredible team name, of which there are already many.
If you join, you get the opportunity to go through and see all the incredible team names.
That's right. We don't have to read them off. And there's now 300 plus, so we could go now until 10, run through Jim Rome's first hour before getting them all up.
331.
Whew. Again, NHL.com or sportsnet.ca/bracket. Enter your team to the Boomer and Warner League.
I predicted earlier we'd have, like, man, 320. We're going to obliterate that.
Dude, remember when we did this Survivor football thing? It totally caught us by surprise. We had to start a second pool because they wouldn't allow more than 200.
Yeah, we had, like, 200 in a minute.
And two of them, yeah. So we're moving on up in the world. This is going to be good. Okay, lots of texts coming in, 960-960, on exactly what to do with Colburn and also the goalie situation. These are the off-season conversations. I don't know that Monahan-Gaudreau, there's much to talk about there. They've earned a lot of money. They deserve a lot of money. They'll probably get a lot of money. And until conversations drag late into the summer, I don't think we have anything to talk about because really there's no news unless, things aren't going well in negotiations. Now we've got something to talk about. We're not there. They're obviously going to be signed. They're obviously two core players moving forward. Ordeo is an easy qualify. Give him his 10% raise, 660 grand, whatever it is. You retain the asset. You can trade him later. You can send him to the minors. You can lose him on waivers. He can start for you next year. He could be your backup, whatever. Just keep the asset. Beyond that, it gets a little more interesting with Joe Colburn. And it's certainly the stated top priority of the general manager, Brad Treliving, was need to address goaltending. So those are the two conversations we've got from now until we get closer to the draft. And then, of course, we'll focus on, well, where are they going to pick? April 30th, we'll find out exactly where they are in the draft lottery thingy. Most likely, the Flames will pick 6th or 7th. Are you keen on that, Jay? I feel like we've been drooling over the top three all year.
It's almost like you need to just come to terms with where they're probably going to pick.
And if they win the lottery, then you're even happier.
Yeah.
It's like going to that movie that set the expectations low. Do not expect the thing. Hey, you might like it.
just hold out hope that maybe, okay, you won your last couple of games. You weren't trying hard to tank. Maybe karma comes into play.
Yeah, I don't believe in hockey gods, but many do. I've noticed that on Twitter. Hockey gods will not reward this. Well, did you see the Oilers win last year?
Sometimes they do.
Do you know what the word random means? It doesn't mean...
Although Buffalo tried really hard to be the worst and they didn't get the top.
Yeah, but they got Eichel. They're all right. The Flames have a 61% chance of picking 6th or 7th. The odds of those two picks combined is 61%.
Resign yourselves to the fact that they're getting...
Clayton Keller.
Damn. Who Peter Klein just despises.
Yeah, the family's already got a restraining order against Klein.
They've already made his jersey.
Yeah. It's Flames jersey Keller. 2016. Might not be that, and maybe that pick's in play, depending on how high it is. We will not find out until April 30th, which should be unbelievable. The biggest audiences for Rogers in hockey this year. I wouldn't be surprised at all. And that's not a joke. That's not making fun of the ratings. That's 7 Canadian markets. All fingers crossed they get a superstar. As for Colburn, text line lighting up on this one as always. Keep Colburn. Where else are we going to find a big body to go to the front of the net? Buy out Raymond or Boma if you have to. Jeez, are you buying out Boma already? Hardly played a year. I'm not arguing that Colburn isn't a good player. My argument would be that he's going to demand or necessitate more money than you should be spending on that type of player. So the context being, look, he's not one of your top three centers. He's not a winger on your top two lines for the bulk of his time in Calgary. So how much can you really spend on a third-line winger who got really hot at the end of the year? And credit to him. He got hot. You can't take those goals away from him. But if you're expecting him to score 21 goals with shooting the same number of shots he did this year, it's not happening. I've got the number here. I got to find it. Because Ryan Pike had it on Friday when we left the station. I believe it was 29% he's shooting since the trade deadline. That's obscene. That's unheard of. That's probably double Gretzky's shooting percentage in his career. And it's not to say that Joe's an incredibly skilled shooter or he's not, or that, you know, this is the craziest thing that's ever happened in hockey. It's just a hot streak. You know, the same way Michael Backlund had, what, 2 goals at Christmas? He was playing better than 2 goals, but he didn't have some bounces along the way. A lot of post and out. The flip side of that was Backlund in the second half of the year, and it was a similar thing for Colburn. There's no way you could expect someone to have 1 out of every 3.5 shots go in the net. It's ridiculous. It's unfathomable. It doesn't happen in the league. And so while he's playing better and while we see him in front of the net more and while he's a guy that has improved and deserves a raise, the threat of arbitration really scares me here. Because what if the arbitrator doesn't know a thing about this? And he says, oh yeah, he's 21. Geez, he's heading into his prime. Maybe he'll get 25. Well, looks 27%. There it is. 27% since the deadline. 27% since February 29th. Unheard of. I hope that's not too nerdy. Like someone's, oh, you can't talk about shooting percentage. Well, I think we're evolved enough, and that's not getting too crazy into the numbers to suggest that that's a hot streak that you just can't do for 82 games. Like if Ovechkin scored on 27% of his shots, let's do this. Just an exercise to illustrate how completely unsustainable it is. So Ovechkin had 50 goals this year on 398 shots. He'd have over 100 goals. Are you kidding me? He'd have 100 goals.
100 goals.
Ovechkin would have had 100 goals if he shot at Joe Colbert's shooting percentage.
Joe Colbert's going to have 100 goals.
Joe Colbert's having 100 goals.
Pay the man.
Give him his money.
He's scoring 100 goals for you.
And again, I don't want this to come across as bashing Colburn. It's just, he can't do that all year. It's a great year. It's a phenomenal finish to the season. But this 27%, 100 goals for Ovechkin if he was shooting that same way. And Ovechkin's pretty all right at shooting the puck, right? We agree there? Ovechkin was at 13%. That's a reasonable number. You could expect him to repeat that. Colburn post-trade deadline is 27. It's absolutely insane. No way anyone can do that ever for the course of 82 games. The only way you see it is if some schmo like Seeloff gets called up, throws one shot at the net, and it goes in. That's the only way he'll get better than 27% over a whole season. Sample size. Anyway, there's a tangent there, but I think it illustrates why it's going to be difficult for the Flames to get good value here. And if they can't get good value on this guy, and he's not a core player, and he's not one of your top three centers, and he's not a winger on your top two lines, like he hasn't been most of his time here, probably money you're better off spending elsewhere. Like a goalie that can win in this league. A number one. Go ahead, pay Colburn $4 million for the next few years. It worked out for the Blackhawks and Brian Bickle. Well, he's not Bickle bad. But yeah, that's kind of the same thing, right? Bickle got hot that one postseason. They paid him for it. And there's no, everyone knew at the time. It was no way he's going to repeat the performance he had. Most of Colburn's were deflections. Holmstrom had a crazy high shooting percentage too. Well, there is that. He was going to the net a lot more the final third of the year. I don't know necessarily that a tipped puck has generally a better chance of going in than a shot puck. You could sell me on that. Like, I might buy that. But well, let's look up Holmstrom. Let's see what his highest shooting percentage ever was, right? I mean, it's not that hard. If only I knew how to spell Holmstrom. We'll do that when we come back. Also, we're going to catch up with an old buddy, Riley Fleming. Golf season winding back up. He's about to get down to Texas and get that thing back in a groove. He watched the Masters yesterday. Local boy, as we do our first ATB golf tips. We're going to do them every Monday for the course of the golf season leading up to the ATB Financial Classic, which is always a great tournament on the McKenzie Tour that comes through town every summer. It'll be the lead up to that. And the tip today, it's early season. There's a couple things you want to make sure you've got completely sorted before you get on the links. He's got your tip for today. That's coming up next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Get connected. Text 960-960 to get your voice heard. Ryan Pinder in the morning on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, it is 9:44. Lots of texts coming in. 100 goals for Ovi. So reasonable. I feel like I just made my entire point for me. Joe Colburn, incredibly hot down the stretch, needs a new deal. We'll get some more texts coming in on that later. But right now, we've got to say hello to a good pal of the show who has been all over the universe and I believe set to go down to Texas. It is time for your first lap of the ATB Golf Tips. Come and see some of Canada's best tee it up at the ATB Financial Classic, Country Hills, August 11th to 14th. It's our buddy Riley Fleming. How are you, Flemmer?
I'm doing good. How about you, Ryan?
Well, Masters Sunday. We've got all the playoff matchup set. No Flames this year, which is disappointing. You won't be able to beak the Stars fans down south. But, hey, a pretty good weekend for me, you?
It was a pretty good weekend. I mean, the Masters was one of the best I've seen in the last probably 10 years. It was unbelievable.
You ever seen anything like that with Spieth? I mean, to see who was the Frenchman that at the Open like 15 years ago? Was it? Vandeveld, yeah.
Hit it in the creek.
That was an epic collapse, but you don't see that from guys that aren't no names very often. I guess maybe Greg Norman's had a few, but Spieth yesterday in the back nine was spooky.
Well, you haven't seen it since McIlroy did it a few years back. I mean, I think McIlroy shot 44 on the back nine the one year, and he hasn't played well really there since. And what happened with Spieth, he just hit a couple of bad shots, and then obviously the 12th hole is such an important hole there, and he hit one bad one to the right. And then what people don't realize is that second shot, where he dropped it, is straight on a downslope and hitting like a 70-yard wedge, which is about as tough as it gets there. So, and then obviously just chunked it. It barely made the water. That's that third one. So
it's weird. You think about how we felt about him at the turn. He's 7-under, 5 strokes ahead of anyone else. It's pretty much watching him in the last couple of years, that's a slam dunk. And yet, at the end of the day, he goes 6-under 66 on Thursday and never gets under par the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, hard to believe. Going into the Masters, he was playing pretty, B average golf. Not hitting it very good. Putter wasn't 100%. I think the reason, he shot 66, then he led the whole way is because he is such a good putter. You look at guys like Dustin Johnson and Jason Day. I mean, those guys made nothing all week out there. I think it just shows how tough it is to putt. Obviously, Dustin Johnson isn't a very good putter, but Jason Day is one of the best, I think, in the game right now, and he made absolutely nothing all week. So Spieth got to rely on his putting, and then that ball striking just ended up costing him eventually.
What do we know about Willett, the Englishman?
I had him in my pool.
So, really? Wow.
I read someone, they do a breakdown every year of the guys that can actually win. And he was one of the statistically favorite guys. And, I mean, he was playing well all week. And then, I mean, 67 on any major Sunday is pretty good. So
now, did you know much about him beforehand? Or was it just simply looking at the numbers that this thing lined up nicely for him, that he was playing well or had the hot putter? How did you throw him in the pool? Because I'm sure you're winning money if you have him. Not many did.
Definitely no. It was just he's playing well going in. I think he played well the week before in Houston there, and very similar golf course. I've actually played the golf course down in Houston. It's set up, you know, a little bit like Augusta. If you miss the green, it falls off down below. Everything's very tight lies if you miss the green. And he played well there, and statistics show if you play well in Houston the week before that you're probably going to do well in Augusta. He's been to Augusta before, which is a big big advantage because, you know, the first-time players rarely play well. You saw what happened to Smiley Kaufman there on the last round. So. Mm-hmm.
What do you know about the other amateur, Beauchamp? I'm saying it wrong.
Bryson DeChambeau.
DeChambeau, yeah. Is this a guy that I remember watching him? They have, a big match play tournament for, is it NCAA or amateurs? But he's been a pretty big name, and this was a big stage for him. He goes pro this coming weekend.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's the number one ranked amateur in the world. He won both the NCAA amateur and then the U.S. amateur, which is, I mean, those are two huge amateur events. I think only a few people have actually won both of them in the same year. Very interesting story. He plays with all his irons are the same length of a 6-iron, which is basically unheard of. There's no one else in the game that does it. He's a really smart guy. He's got a physics degree, very smart golf mind. And in his opinion, it's if you have an iron, every iron's the same, you make the exact same swing with it. But if you think about it, I mean, that's like your 60-degree wedge would be like 3-4 inches longer.
Sure.
And your 3-iron would be 3 inches shorter or so.
Interesting angle. I don't know that that's going to be adopted worldwide anytime soon, but if he wins a couple majors, maybe we'll start listening a little more. Where are you at in your season, friend? We saw you last year on the McKenzie Tour coming through town to the ATP Financial Classic. That was a lot of fun getting to do a practice round with you there before that crazy tornado chased us off the course. And then I think I saw you on Twitter over in Asia trying to qualify for something over there in the fall.
Yeah, I spent a couple months in the winter in Asia. I was trying to qualify for the Asian Tour. Unfortunately, I got sick. I got heat stroke in the morning of the first round of final stage, so I ended up having to bow out of that. But I did stay over for a few more weeks and play some of the Asian Development Tour events. So I spent 2 months in Malaysia, Thailand, and Singapore, and I got to play a couple events, played really well in a few. I shot my new personal best, 63, which I was really happy with. So.
Goodness, where was this, and how did that unfold?
This was in Kuala Lumpur, and it was the second event I was playing in, and I was 6-under going into the third round, and it took me a day and a half to finish it because in Malaysia they have prayer delays at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, and so we had a prayer delay, then we had a rain delay, ended up having come back the next morning at 6 a.m. to finish off my round. But once it was all said and done, it ended up being a bogey-free 63, which I was really proud of.
That is cool, man. We were chatting with Riley Fleming. It's round one of ATB's financial golf tips. Checking out Riley's website, rileyfleminggolf.com. I want you to get in the heads of most of us chops that will get out maybe 10 to 30 times a year. This is very early season for us. We haven't been in Kuala Lumpur. We have not been golfing down in Texas, as you will be soon. What's a tip you'd give a chop or maybe an ambitious amateur that's very, very early season, as most of us Calgarians are?
Well, the biggest thing I always had to transition from going from practicing in the winter to playing early spring golf was my alignment would be way off. I'd spend all winter hitting in a dome or just, you know, not getting the hit as much. And then you'd go out onto a golf course and you have to be target specific. So I'd just say go to the range and spend 20, 25 minutes with a club or an alignment stick, something down your feet line, pointed to the target so you can line your body up to that and just get used to being pointed at the target again. It was always my biggest struggle early season. So.
That's a good tip, and I see a lot of that. In fact, I think our buddy Todd Halpin, he's got one of those sticks that comes in part of the kit. You can measure your, it's for putting, you can use it for alignment, but that seems to be something that a lot of the pros like to do just to make sure if you're not squared up at the right place, even if you hit it well, you're screwed.
Well, exactly, and if you're lined up wrong, you can hit a shot, and you can hit it perfect, and look up, and it's 30 yards offline, and think, oh, well, what did I do there? I was, you know, I just missed that by 30 yards, where in fact, you actually hit it perfect, but you're just aimed wrong. It's pretty rare. You'll see pros practice without sticks or something on the ground. My old Team Canada coach, Derek Ingram, wouldn't let us practice without them, just because that's how important it is.
What's next for you? I think I've alluded twice to you heading down south. You are going to be on the Mackenzie Tour again this year, the Canadian Tour. When does it start, and what do you do to get ready between now and then?
Mackenzie Tour starts end of May, May 25th in Vancouver again. Till then, I got to go. I'm going down to Texas on Wednesday here. I got to go get my car. I left it there all winter. But just to prepare, I'm going to play the Zurich Classic Monday qualifier, which is the PGA event in New Orleans. So I'm going to give that a run.
Why not just throw down another 63? That probably would work for you, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? Might change my life. So.
That'd be pretty cool. Very excited about the tournament coming to Calgary. I believe end of July. No, I got it right here. It is August 8th to 14th, Country Hills in Calgary. We definitely will see a lot of you around that week. But until then, hopefully we can catch up once or twice on the phone and have a great cram session down in Texas.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Ryan.
All right, there's our buddy, Riley Fleming, rileyfleminggolf.com for more info and a good tip with alignment, because golf's hard enough to begin with. Then you stop playing for, what, 4, 5, 6, 7 months with the winters we deal with here. A bit of an earlier start this year, so that's nice. But if you're not even squared up to the right place, if you're not aligned properly, as he said, you could hit the best shot in the world, which is almost impossible this time of year if you haven't been practicing. But it's wasted. At least if you're squared up in the right spot, even if you hit it poorly, it's probably salvageable. So there is your first golf tip of the year for ATB Financial, who thinks you can hit the high draw. We do. ATB Financial, proud sponsor of golf in Alberta. Riley's a gem. How bad is that? He's ripping apart Asian Tour qualifying, gets heat stroke last day. Oh, but 63, same trip over. So you win some, you lose some, I guess. Back to the text line to close out the hour. We'd talked a lot about Joe Colburn's next contract, as well as what to do in net. These are the big conversations surrounding the club heading into the offseason. It is locker cleanout day down at the Scotiabank Saddledome. So those questions and many more will be asked. Also, some conversations surrounding the draft lottery. Pinder, for God's sake, he didn't score all of his goals post-deadline. I agree you can't give him term, but by all means, they can sign him for 1 or 2 years at $3 million. See, I don't know that you can pay that guy $3 million. I mean, certainly you're able to, but if it hurts the quality of netminder that you can get, it's not worth it. How much better is he going to be than Derek Grant if Grant got the same minutes? Probably a little bit. I don't know that it's a ton. And how many of his goals came late in the year? Well, what was he at? He was at 10 with a month to go, a month and a half to go. So he got half of his scoring in probably a third of the season. I just don't like trying to extrapolate those numbers over 82 games because it's crazy. No, you are bashing him, Pinder. If you take Ovi on a streak, he'd have crazy percentages too. You have to look at the whole year. Use your rationale across the board for goalies, defense, and centers. Okay. Someone mentioned Holmstrom, so I went to the effort of looking up Thomas Holmstrom. How did we get to that? Well, someone said, look, Joe's been going to the net a lot more. He's tipping pucks. Maybe that's why his shooting percentage skyrocketed so dramatically down the stretch. Well, Holmstrom's a 16.3% over the course of his career, and that's incredibly high. He actually had 2 years north of 20. That's almost unheard of. Three. Wow. So maybe if you are adept at tipping the puck around the net, that can increase your shooting percentage. But a couple things that we need to clarify. A, I don't think anyone's going to be better than Thomas Holmstrom at tipping the puck around the net anytime soon. So to suggest that because Holmstrom did it at 20%, which is nowhere near 27, that Colburn can do it, that's a bit of a stretch to me. And B, I mean, for the bulk of his career, this guy is 17% or under. That's most of his years. So there's still a major correction that would happen. I don't mind keeping Joe around. You just have to pay him to be a 12 to 15 goal scorer, not a 21 goal scorer, because that's what likely is going to happen. And the comparisons to Lance Boma, I think, are fair only in one sense. Guys coming in that had a lot of hard work and a lot of bounces along the way in that contract year. I don't think anyone's expecting Lance to get 16 again. Coleman does not shoot the puck enough to get 21 goals again. If he can increase his shot rate, maybe. Not sure if he thinks about these things or not. We'll find out today. Heading down to the Dome for the locker clear out. Elsewhere, Pinder, it seems like we're going to be stuck with picks 6 to 8. Someone's done the draft lottery over and over and over like 50 times recording their results. Yeah, there's a lot of 6-7 if you're running the Flames in the simulators. 61% chance they'll pick 6th or 7th. And man, going into that game in Edmonton, what was it, 2 weekends ago? Last weekend? Last weekend. That was, you lose to Edmonton, they could still finish ahead of you. And now all of a sudden we're staring down the barrel of a 6th or 7th pick. Maybe they win. Who knows? Maybe they win. Here's an unusual one, Jay. Pinder, what will be the bigger deal, Kobe's last game or Golden State going for the record? Is that AHL?
Go Bulls.
Golden State's way bigger. Kobe's last game will be hooray, hurrah, we love the guy, but the game itself probably won't matter. Golden State being the best team in the history of the NBA regular season, that will be something. They've got Memphis at home on Wednesday, their final game of the season. They beat the Spurs last night to tie the Bulls with 72 wins in a year. They got one game left to set the record. Crazy. Best thing about watching Masters on Sunday, Pinder, I didn't have to imagine the piano music in my head to drown out the chatter from the significant other. I just turned up the volume on the TV. Oh, it's familiar. Yeah, I got you. And finally, Pinder, I just did the simulator. Calgary first, Buffalo second, Leafs third. I can live with that, Jay, and that's probably all we have time for. Lots of Flames reaction tomorrow. The Jim Rome Show is next on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.